Hey, conscious leaders, a warm welcome to yet another episode. So exciting. As you know, we are busy with a theme that I'm so passionate, and the more I'm working on this theme, fortified future, bring back trust, bringing back trust to ourselves, but also learning to bring back trust to the system and bringing trust back to corporates and bringing trust back into society is so vital, because we transact on an emotional and spiritual level. And I think that the more we are working on, you know, and having these conversations, the more I'm learning, and trust can be so complex, let me tell you. So I'm absolutely so excited to have somebody very important with me today. She actually serves on the Conscious Leaders Advisory Board, so that we can actually work together in order to serve high potential women to drive impact in the worlds that they find themselves in. And she is a trailblazer, a chief fire igniter, Ati Mbete. Warm welcome.
Thank you, Carmen. Thank you so much, Carmen. Thank you to Conscious Leaders, and thank you for having me.
Oh, so privileged. Listen, you know, since the first day I've met you, I was just absolutely blown away by your charisma, your passion for diversity and inclusion, but also how you take women and, you know, different people and take them and get them into the right positions based on their evolution and how they're evolving and transitioning.
Yeah.
And this is how your business was born, Trans Era Solutions.
Yes.
You also started an initiative, another amazing initiative, WAW, which is Women at the Well Alliance, dedicated towards strategic building across the African continent and to make an impact.
Yes, correct.
So tell us a little bit more.
So yes, as you've mentioned, I am an entrepreneur, founder, and CEO of Trans Era Solutions, that meets people that are transitioning within their corporate spaces and they're looking for the next. And with a focus, as you've mentioned, in diversity, equity, and inclusion. And what we're trying to say basically is that we all deserve a seat at the table. We are all able, given a chance, to be able to execute whatever is expected of us by corporate companies. And it's just a promotion of equality in workspaces. That's the most important thing, that we are able. Teach me, I'll be able to do it. And that's my notion and philosophy. And it came as a result of, because of people that had always believed in me in my career journey, even when I didn't see myself, but they were always, my managers or coaches would say, Ati, do you know that you can actually be a team leader? And I didn't believe in myself at the time. And they'd speak to the higher Ati versus the Ati who was very low vibrational, had imposter syndromes, had issues and all of that. And that's why it was quite important for me to step into Trans Era and say, give people a chance and be an advocate, sort of like a speaker for them into these spaces as well.
That's absolutely wonderful. You know, I think it's so vital and so important, you know, to recognize potential in others and to see, because so many times people don't recognize it about themselves.
We don't, especially us women come in, we don't see ourselves, we don't celebrate ourselves. So hence it's a very, Trans Era is a very close and a dear, I'm not going to call it a project. For me, it's a calling.
I love that. I love that. And it's so important to love what you do, because when you love what you do, that's when you actually make a bigger impact than
100%
than doing a job you don't enjoy. But anyway, we want to get into the meat.
Yes.
See, there's a story behind a story behind a story, and I want us to get into that. As you know, for conscious leaders, what is very important is to show the audaciousness inside out.
Yeah.
Reflecting on, you know, our emotional intelligence, our cultural intelligence, how creative we are. We also, how we are embracing life and collectively working together to make an impact.
Yeah.
I think take us back into that little girl, the innocent child. When you were born, little girl, what was the dream she had?
Wow, Kevin. So I'm the firstborn of four in my family. So you can imagine the pressure. I think my mom was trying to emulate herself into me, where she raised me to sort of model her steps in her life. So that, as a firstborn, there's always that pressure to sort of be like the second command or third in command parent. Raised both by father and mother, marital home, environment. And my dream was, I grew up as a child, was always curious. I wanted to understand how things work. I've always wanted to understand the mind of a designer. I actually wanted to be an architect. Because it was always the creative mind, the genius behind the design and the story of the why. Why did you create? And funny enough, now I've ended up in entrepreneur and in recruitment and executive search, completely different. But then again, still same space of the mind of a person. So I'm quite passionate when it comes to the thinking side, the genius of a person. And coming from a home from the Eastern Cape, I'm from the rural side, Eastern Cape. Both parents were working. My mom used to work for Toyota, one of the dealerships for Toyota at the time in Mthatha. That's where presidents come from. Khosa, President Mandela and Thabo Mbeki are first. So it just says a lot. It comes from, I come from a place of geniuses and thinkers and leaders. And I remember Mr. Bennett, who was their manager. There was this fear they had of white people. And I was like, Mom, why are you scared? Why the reverence and the fear of a white person? Are we not all the same? And I saw this across her other black colleagues as well. And for me, I'd go and sit in Mr. Bennett's office and we'd had conversations. And I think I was like, what, 8, 9 years old. Wow. And I wanted to understand, why are you the manager of this company? And what makes you different, you know, and all of that. I didn't have the fear that my parents had or the notion that they had towards, for me, in my eyes, we're all the same. It's just the pigmentation that differentiates us. But I think we think the same. That's nothing that really separates us, despite our backgrounds and all of that. So that was my upbringing. My parents were very militaristic in their parenting style. Very disciplinarians, especially, like I said, firstborns, they'll always be tougher with you, greater expectations that they had of you. And so the pressure was quite a lot on me. And that pressure has carried on with me over the years, even though they are both late, because their voices continue to linger at the back of my mind and still keep me within boundaries. And not really bad boundaries in a sense, where you grow up disciplined, you grow up with respect, respect for elders, knowing how to greet people when you meet them. You know, even if you might be a CEO of an organization, but you acknowledge the person who cleans the toilet in the bathroom. That was the type of upbringing that I come from, which I'm absolutely grateful for my parents for. That also disciplinary side of things, because one thing that has really helped me in business, both professionally and in business, is discipline. So truly grateful for that. And family of four, I mean, four siblings, and had to step in, like I said, help my mom in terms of upbringing of my younger siblings, which is something that I still do, particularly something that's quite common in black families, that as you rise, you take care of the rest. Normally it's called black tax, because it's seen as something that's quite heavy and burdensome, but it's how you choose to look at it, the lens that you choose. Do you see your family as a burden, or do you see them as a tax, or do you see them as an extension of you to take care of them, because they don't have the same strength and ability as you are? Because I'm of this notion, coming, that we're not all born the same or equally in terms of our strengths, our abilities. So sometimes you have to carry people along.
What was it like growing up during the apartheid?
So for me, I come born 1985.
Okay.
Yeah, so still in that era.
But it's almost towards, it's almost towards the end. Where it was a little bit, it was still hardcore.
Still hardcore.
But it was not in like in the 60s or 70s, you know, how our parents have been
the intensity of it and all of that. So Mthatha, it was independent. It was called the Transkei at the time. So we were never really exposed to the harshness and the brutalities for like some other people, be it in the Western Cape or the Gauteng province, for that matter of fact. I recall when we were young, if we had to go to East London, we needed a dorm bus, like sort of like a passport to allow you to transition once you get to the border gate. Then there's a dorm bus that you needed to provide to get into East London. East London was sort of like a holiday destination and all of that. And for me, like I said, it was not intense and abrupt like it was for other people. I grew up in a family. My parents, my dad was pan-Africanist, very pro-pan-Africanist and all of that. But it was never pan-Africanism that you treat other people badly. It was Pan-Africanism of reconciliation. We can all live together in one space, in harmony, without having to be hard on each other. Yes, mistakes have been done, but there's a way to amicably sort out and resolve issues amongst each other. And one of the things that I think that made, you know, apartheid to be quite intense, people tend to be very hard when they don't understand. So I came from an upbringing where we were taught these are the realities and this is why people are scared and so forth. So it was not hectic for me, like I said, for other people. And hence I'm able to stand in these diversity, equity, inclusion spaces, that diversity, equity and equality shouldn't be a hard conversation. And it shouldn't be a brutal conversation. We're coming out here, pulling out swords and stabbing at each other because you were tough on me. Your great grandparents treated my parents badly and all of that. That's not my notion. So I came into that era. I recall 1994, I accompanied my mother to go and vote. Very long line, hated it. In fact, in the recent elections, it was my first time to go and vote recently now in 2024. So I'm a first time voter. Woo-hoo! Because of the experience, I looked at the faces. There was hope, there was joy, but also the faces that people had. And I think I'm born 1985, 1994. I think I was 11, 10, 11, 9. And the faces that I could see of the people in my rural area. And the question was of what next? The anticipation, the anxiety that it came with. And for me, it left an imprint. It was not because the reason that I didn't vote over the years, but because I didn't have choices or whatever, but it was the faces that I saw of the elderly men and women in my village. My mom was pregnant at the time when we went to the elections. And for me, it just carried a trauma around that. It was those faces that were left imprinted on me. And that just made me like, no.
You're touching on something so important, which is this generational trauma.
It is.
Right?
Yeah.
This continent, Africa, and especially South Africa.
Yeah.
We have so much generational trauma from all aspects and all sides. And then we get ostracized also, you know, with the global communities. Yeah. Like, we know we are like the stepchild of the world. Like, yeah. But I think this is Africa's time right now. And I really think that we should definitely pay attention.
I always say that it's such an exciting time to be in Africa right now because there's such an awakening. And the Africa child has gone into herself to do some healing.
Yes.
And rediscovery of herself, who she is. And therefore, there's a reemergence of Africa that is coming back into the world that I don't think the world is ready for.
I think the world is hungry for what we have to bring. And I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Africa has such a rich indigenous wisdom.
True.
And it has gone lost over the years and with everything that has happened and the trauma and, you know, with the modern society and how everything is evolving. Yeah. And people are no longer seeking information. They're seeking wisdom.
True.
And I believe that this continent can really offer that. You know, how many times, I know this is a silly example, but how many times do you see international people refer to Ubuntu?
Ubuntu, yes. a phrase that is like so loosely used this day, everything
exactly,
Ubuntu.
Exactly, without
Ubuntu. And Ubuntu is deeper.
Tell than us.
That. Ubuntu, it's culture. Ubuntu, it's upbringing. Ubuntu, it's your traditions, your norm, the way of doing things. It's like your core, your essence, who you are. That is definition of Ubuntu for me. So it's not just because I care about my other person, but it's who we are, the way you were raised, your upbringing, the rich culture, the history, the wisdom that you talk about, which is Ubuntu for me. That is my definition. And to talk about what you were saying, that now the world is rising and looking for wisdom and not intelligence. Our intelligence brought us here. it brought the world to where it is. And it also brought the world into destruction and standstill intelligence. And hence the seeking now for wisdom. Because then when you're talking wisdom, it's coming from a higher ascended place versus the mind that can be affected by emotions and can be low vibrational at times. And then it can make you think differently and have different outcomes and poor outcomes. Hence the seeking of wisdom right now. And these are the types of corporates as well that I always say when we launch the Women at the World, that it's not about the jargons, the eloquence, what you put out there that's going to make you stand out. It's pulling from the divine. That you're able to bring in something different and wiser than what there is. And that's going to be your X factor and your distinguisher in the marketplace. Not that we are in competition, but that's what's going to make you stand out.
100%. I think spiritual intelligence, as I always say, is the one thing that corporates have kind of like put on the side. So it's like, leave it at home.
At home, yes.
Don't bring your that. All of you. We just want that part of you.
Bring your skill set, your technical aptitude and your capabilities. But for me, even with Trans Era, how I operate, it's the fusion of the spiritual and the commercial. And everything that I've done, the name Trans Era, it was divine, prophetic. It's not a name that I came up with just randomly. How I came into the space and the business that I do was spiritual. How I wrote the profile, our service offering, it was something spiritual. It was not because, oh, there's a lot of recruitment agencies out there and whatever. It has been a divine journey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's so important. I mean, even if I look, when I started my business versus what my business is today and what it's evolving into is divinely guided. And I feel that this is the time to bring your whole self to the table. The only way you can do that is bringing all parts of you from religion.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a conversation with Taz Singh and she said it so beautifully. It's so vital for us to embrace religion. It's like the youth are coming and they're saying they want to know how do they become more spiritual, but it's like, and they want to give up their religion. Mm-hmm. And it's not about that. Religion actually teaches you to be righteous.
Yeah.
And grounds you.
Governance. Yeah.
Spirituality is who we are.
Yeah.
You know, just to your point of Ubuntu. Mm-hmm. I am because we are, right? The spiritual laws dictate and say, as within, so without.
Yeah.
As above, so below. There's so many interesting perspectives from different belief systems, but I cannot be here if you're not here.
True.
We all are interconnected. And I think spiritual intelligence for me is about learning interconnectedness.
Correct.
And understanding that we all have something. So
interlinked,
if I see something,
if
I see something in you that aggravates me, I need to go and check myself.
It means,
there's fingers back.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's hard. And trying to practice that self-awareness is really hard.
Yeah.
I mean, conscious leaders is teaching me so much more about myself
than
anything else.
Than the movement
right?
itself. Yes. The developmental areas, the things that you need to work on and all of that. Huh?
Yeah. Because, you know, it's really working on it as you go.
Yeah.
But I mean, I really want to also just talk about, and I mean, I'm fascinated by this conversation. I really enjoy learning about, you know, perspectives from different cultures. What culture do you represent? You say Pan-African and maybe for a global audience, what do you actually mean by that?
For me, Pan-African in the way that my dad raised me, he was that my brother, be it from Zimbabwe, Zambia, we are all one. And our story, like you said, interlinked, interconnected, and all of that. By being Pan-African, we actually, in my family, one of my uncles, he's a great student, he's in terms of books and studying about history. And he traced our lineage. And we found out that Mbete, which is my surname, he comes from Uganda.
Oh, wow.
So I'm Ugandan. And if you we traced ourselves down Uganda into Kenya. If you're going to Kenya, there's a lake called Lake Ati. I recall recently I was in Tanzania, flew into Kenya, and people thought I'm Kenyan, and they started speaking Swahili. in Tanzania, same thing, they taught that I'm a Tanzanian lady when I was in Dar es Salaam. And further down, we migrated down into Swaziland, where we were in Mbabane for some time. So some South Africans, when they look at me, they think I'm either Swati or Botswana. I'm from Bots. Then come down. We were the, went into KwaZulu-Natal. We were the last Zulus to leave into Transkei, into the Eastern Cape side, to be among the Xhosas. So I'm not even Xhosa, I'm Mfengu. And so this is what I talk about, Pan-Africanism, that your story, your journey is intertwined into my story. And the problem that we tend to undermine or undervalue another person is because we don't understand where we come from. And this is one of the things that has been very helpful and instrumental in understanding myself, identity.
Oh, wow.
Knowing your story. And by knowing your story, it means that you need to go back into history to get who you are. Why do I function in this way? If we look at royalty or families back in the day, they didn't marry into particular families because of bloodlines. What does your bloodline come with? Your blood types and all of those things. And these are the things now we've overlooked in our society. So even with me as Ati, the Ati that you are seeing today, I had to do a lot of deep inner work. Once I began to understand my heritage, my family's history, my father's side of the history, my mom's side of the history, which has German blood, hence the light feature or pigmentation. My mom was worse. She looked like a colored lady. And when we asked why, their great-grandfather met a white lady. There was a shipwreck in part of Port St. John's. There's a little harbor, small.
You did a lot of research.
I did a lot of research because I needed to understand why Ati function this way, our weaknesses in our bloodlines, and our strengths as well. And those are the things that I embrace on. And part of what I know in our history, I come from a family of teachers, entrepreneurs. I come from a lineage of advisors to kings and kings also. So I carry royal blood as well. And so those things are very important. And that's why it allows me to step in my core, because I'm saying that my ancestors were these things. And this is my bloodline in our history. Why not ride on that wave of greatness that I come from?
And that, you know, that is so profound and so beautiful, because so many times, because we have lost that wisdom and that wisdom deficit, we lose our sense of worth.
Yes.
And think that we are not important, but each person on this planet is important. They matter and they come from somewhere.
Somewhere, exactly.
Some story.
And this is what we've lost along the way. I fully agree, Carmen, that we've lost that essence of knowing who we are. And so when you don't know who you are, you'll be defined how you come across to others. Society today, we've got social media that tells us how to behave. I'm the girl that when I step into boardrooms, I'll come in with my pink lipstick or my pink outfit. Who said that as women, we're supposed to go in gray outfits and suits and whatever? Who said we should do business in a masculine energy and be tough and hardcore? I'm not saying that there's sometimes where I'll need to pull up a whipper bit and like, where's my invoices, where my payments and all of that. But I'm saying how I choose to appear. I'm very tra-la-la-la. I bring myself because Ati is eclectic. Ati is vibrant. Ati is a fire starter. I reignite dormant fires, and that's who I am. And I don't allow society or spaces to define me. And it's because I've done a lot of internal work with myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's also that inner revolution, you know, I find, the more you go inside, the wiser you become, the more actually is being revealed to you. And, you know, sometimes the synchronicities are so insane. Like I sometimes feel like I'm on an eat, pray, love journey within. Like I don't really
need you.
Like it's unbelievable, but it's so profound, and this is why the inner work is so important, because whatever you do on the outside is going to make an impact.
Absolutely.
And also you'll attract whatever is, you know, meant for you.
On the basis of the inner work.
Inner work that you're doing.
And if you recall our conversation, the last time that we had a coffee come in, and I was telling you about my childhood and the traumas that I've went through. One of the things about trauma is that it can silence who you are. And like you said, when you opened earlier on, we have a history of generational trauma. Not that we, it's a history, but in the journey of destiny, we met with traumas that hit us and that made us forget who we are. Part of one thing that really crippled me in my upbringing was being molested several times, not once, but several times by a family member. And part of the black text is that when you are a family and you're doing well, you need to help one of the relatives and bring in a child, raise their child, or whatever the case might be. And my parents did that. They took one of their nephews, brought him into a house because they're trying to help his parents. And we were in the city, Mthatha at the time. And so that my parents are considered like middle class, doing well. We're staying in a suburb in Mthatha in Southern Wood. And I was so excited to have a big brother or a big sibling stepping in because I was like, ooh, alleviated from the role of being the older one in the firstborn. My parents are not going to be always coming for me. Why wasn't this not done and whatever? So I had this great elderly cousin brother. And I recall he was sort of like in high school, used to wear gray pants and whatever. One of the things with rape or trauma is that it teaches you sometimes to block certain things. And with rape, any rape survivor and not victim, I choose to use the word survivor, I call them survivor thoughts, is that rape cripples you. It paralyzes you. It robs you of your voice. It robs you of your innocence and your purity. Because I was a child. I was 7, 8 years old.
Sure. I'm so sorry.
And these are the things that silence you. So that was my first major trauma experience. Besides a car accident and falling off a tree and having a huge tumor on my thigh that I had to have an operation. Listen, I've got stories for days in terms of things.
Listen, Stella, keep going. Blows,
like, you're a survivor beyond fire
igniter. In terms of blows that life has thrown at me. And these are the things when I see a woman today who's a drunkard or into prostitution, I understand. Because one of the things that rape can do to you is that you lose yourself. The sense of self, and you lose that sense of why should I bother? And you choose to live life recklessly. And you'll tell yourself, because life has dealt with me unfair cards, why should I care? And so you go on the downward spiral in life of not caring anymore. So I understand a woman who sits in a shipping because she's given up on herself. I understand a woman who's resorted into prosecution because you've given up on herself. So the journey of IT over these 39 years has been finding IT. I had to find myself in order to survive and re-emerge the person that I am and I continue to evolve into. Because had I not chosen to make a decision to find myself, I would not be sitting with you here, Carmen. I'll be part of the statistics of the black women in South Africa who are unemployed, are probably sitting somewhere with multiple children or dead. Because in the journey, I try to commit suicide because there's self-hate. You lose your confidence and you hate yourself and ask yourself, why me? You always grow. There was that question, why me? Because we're three girls and our younger brother. Why did you choose me? Why didn't you go for my younger sisters? And we're like, I'm born 85. Asanda is 86. Andy is 87. Why not Andy? Why not Asanda? Why me? So in the years, it was, why me? And I was like, why bother to leave then? Because I see myself as something that's dirty and filthy. And you feel that you don't deserve to, you don't deserve love because you were robbed of love. You don't deserve to be in good spaces. Why should you laugh? Because your laughter as a child was taken away from you. So I've had to teach myself to laugh. Teach myself to love myself again. Teach myself to laugh because you are robbed joy. Teach myself to tell myself that, Ati, you deserve. You deserve good things. And it had to take, that's why I'm saying our journeys, whether you're white or black, and most people who've pulled me out of the rut, God has always used white people for some strange reason. They would say, Ati, I see you. It takes people who see you to pull you out of the rut. And that's why I stand and I'm here today, because they gave me a chance and said, Ati, there's something about you. Despite the internal voices of warfare, the turmoil that goes in within that results into depression. If we look at today, a lot of people are in depression because of trauma, generational trauma that has been passed on. And now everything is coming to the surface because we are awakening, as you've mentioned, because we need to deal with ourselves. So I had a meltdown. I remember the day that I told my family, because I was silent. My perpetrator, cousin, brother told me that if you tell anybody, I'm going to shoot you. I'm going to kill you and I'll kill your family. And my dad had a gun for safety issues that he kept in a safe. So my cousin knew where the gun was. And that's how the first time I remember he pulled out the gun on me. He waited for everybody to leave. My siblings were playing outside and our house helper was outside. So, and that was the first encounter. So over the years, during that time of the pain, I blocked the pain. And it's cancerous, which is not physical cancer, but it's an emotional cancer that eventually comes out and bursts out in unexpected places. And hence we get today the words that angry black woman, because there's a cancer, an emotional cancer that we are not dealing with. So when you don't deal with self and don't deal with trauma, trauma will show up itself in certain ways. And part of the damage that rape also done is embracing love from a man, learning to trust men, learning to allow your body to enjoy. I didn't know what it is to orgasm coming. It's only now in my late 30s and I'm like, where was I? Ati, where were you all this while? And it took a man to know. It took a man who said, why are you not enjoying? I didn't see you come. Because for men, they always see a woman as a place of just releasing themselves and that's it. But it had to take one man and said to me,
wow, that's profound.
Why didn't you come? What is wrong? And I had to tell him my story, and he taught me the steps. So life is about pausing, going back into self in order for you to re-emerge again as the original Ati, because we have different versions, minus 1.0, 0.1, minus whatever, until you get into the highest self of you. And like you said, we multifaceted and there's different elements into us. So it has been a story of a fight coming to find me. Like that movie, Finding Nemo.
Listen, it is the most inspiring story. But also, I have to tell you, I mean, I was moved quite emotionally. And it's because I'm just seeing a little girl being so afraid and so trapped.
Yeah.
And perhaps, you know, how old were you when you told your parents? How many years did you hold that in?
So I only told my mom passed away in 98. I told my parents, my dad, my late dad now, who passed away from cancer 2019. I was 21. I had an emotional breakdown. Left my job in Cape Town. Had a beautiful apartment by Greenpoint. Professionally, I was doing well. And because I knew how to transfer my trauma and bury it into corporate. I was that girl who doesn't go on leave. I was that girl that you could rely on that is going to do overtime. If the sites go down, she's going to sit and pull in 24 hours, 12 hours. And at that time, there were pills that were called thins. I don't know.
I was on them.
Listen, I was on them. So listen, Carmen, I was a druggie of Nana, buzzing like a bunny in the office. And I worked in a call center, an international call center. For an American company, Poker Room.
Sorry, you're taking me down memory lane. Oh my God.
So I was that girl who buried trauma in work until I broke down and I couldn't. At the peak of my career, I'm starting working. I was, you know, that go-to girl in the office. A player, awards, incentives. Trust me, it's me. Because I was bearing something. It's not that because I was after any award. They didn't see the broken auntie who was hiding herself in work. So eventually broke down, went home, gave away everything in Cape Town, and I went back home to the Eastern Cape to stay with my stepmom. and my siblings. And we had a reconciliation. One of my older half-sisters, she organized a family reconciliation thing. I don't know what she called it. She gave it a beautiful name. And we sat that day as a family and we spoke about our problems and our traumas. And they were impacted by my father because they were from the first wife, my dad's first marriage. And they spoke about the pain that my dad caused to them. And I also happened to be in the room. And I said, Dad, you and Mom were so busy, you didn't see that I was being raped in the house. It destroyed my dad. I've never seen my dad cry because you don't see men crying, particularly black men, because we're taught to take in all the pain. They're told, take, a man doesn't cry. My dad, bro, I said, Dad, I was molested in the house with you and Mom there because they were so busy trying to survive that they didn't notice that when I started to bedwet, they didn't notice when I started to suck my thumb as a soother. They didn't know that the introvert auntie became an extra, I mean, the extrovert auntie became an introvert and I pulled back. And children will give you signs when there's something that's not right.
Even in your handwriting, so, you know, how you, yes. when you start writing, how far you write from the left or the right, the spaces in between tells exactly, and also how you draw a tree.
It's the little things little that we take for granted and they overlooked. So at 21, breakdown, that's where I spoke and I released. My mom was already late.
What a long time to carry that within you. And I have to say, I am so sorry for what you've gone through, but I'm also going to say, look at what you have become. You are fortified, you're resilient, but it's just almost perfection for me. It's like this beautiful synchronicity of your career. Like you are in a position, I mean, I've never thought about it that way because now what you're saying, I'm recognizing in myself, right? Because we have similar stories from that perspective.
Yeah.
And I am a workaholic. I am a workaholic. And it's just, it's like, okay, I need to go and work on this. This is something I now need to go and work on because
you're running away from certain things.
There's something I haven't dealt with and some inner healing that needs to happen. So I want to say thank you. For being so open and honest. And I hope that everybody that's listening is also, you know, taking in this story because I think personally for me is once we as women start sitting around tables, having a cup of tea together, and especially with different cultures, I am finding it so soothing for my soul right now. That's all I want. I just want to go beyond of what I know.
Yeah.
I want to step into the unknown and learn from each other.
Yeah.
And I think this is why collective intelligence is so important.
Yes.
Because if we come together and we have these conversations, we can learn from each other. Yeah. And if there's something that you said that I'm going to think about for the next week or two, that I can process that and I can work on it. And the same vice versa. And I think, I just want to say you're such a blessing. I know, you know, I think about, also your input. You know, she's quite a force, with conscious leaders and also how she, sees things. You know, she's a businesswoman of note. And I want to touch, on this part, right? So I remember the first story I heard from you was you had two children.
Two kids, two boys, 14 and 11 years old.
She comes to Joburg. Now listen, she comes to Joburg, signed contract, the whole lot, ready to start her new job, only to arrive at this job. And they said, you don't have a job.
Yeah, they can't. The words were a week before that I'm supposed to start on the roll. I'm in Cape Town. This is after COVID. And I'm like, thank God, yay, a new start. And I thought I'm going to enter Johannesburg, you know, all la-di-da. Because there's a way that we see Joburg if you're from the Eastern Cape. Joburg is opulence. Joburg is like the grandeur. And I was like, oh, listen, they're going to put my car on the truck, my furniture on the truck, and I'm getting a nice apartment, blah, blah. I'm finally leaving my life. What an entry into Joburg.
You laugh about it now, but I'm sure it was hectic.
Listen, the I saw flames, stars, flames, call it whatever, it was there. So here I COVID, because I was in a partnership with Julia Sinclair, love her to bits. She's the one who taught me the ropes of business and also recruitment. I always say, if you want to learn in life and master something, sit under a master.
Mm.
And that's a mistake and the problem that we have today, particularly with this Gen Z, the alphas. And it's that ability to be able to sit and learn. Do not rush your learning process. So I sat under Julia Sinclair. She came to me, like I said, my life has been divine. So she was looking for a business partner in the arm of, in the arm of her second business where it would focus on D&I. And she wanted to partner with a black female and, for this part of the business. And she had approached another woman. And the lady was like, oh no, I'm not the right person, but I'll recommend somebody else. And that's how my name got to her. I don't know the lady who referred me, but your work speaks for yourself in any room. So it's important.
Love it.
I always say, always autograph your work with excellence because you never know.
Oh my gosh, that's a t-shirt right there, right?
Autograph your work with excellence because you never know who might mention you in room. So it's one thing for your name to be mentioned, but excellence will speak for you. I don't even need people to talk for me, but to say Ati, but they'll say there's a woman I know who's a workaholic work sometimes in our advantage. And she mentioned me to Julia. Julia reached out to me. We had a meeting and we started the partnership, Equity Insights. And she taught me the ropes of recruitment. She taught me the ropes of business. Hence, TransEra is what it is today. I owe it to that woman. She didn't know she was teaching me, but I sat and I learned and I gleaned and I soaked in everything that I could watch because I'm an observer. So I watch your actions, not only what you say, but your actions, how you move, how you enter into boardrooms. She would take me, we enter into boardrooms, she would drive conversations, strategically sit at an edge of a table. And she said, Ati, when you're entering into boardroom, even if it's a client's office, sit on the edge of the seat so that you can control the meeting. So it was that crazy, little things that we take for granted. And I observed and I took those traits with me into business, but also I took Ati into TransEra. And TransEra was birthed haphazardly because TransEra was registered in 2016, but I was already working with Julia. I was like, let's pause on TransEra. Anyway, I don't know what I want to do, but I've got a company registered. 2020 COVID came and she was immigrating. She was planning to immigrate at the time with a partner, husband into the States. And I was like, no, I want to go into training and coaching because I love people development. I want to train and coach. I do that effortlessly as much as I do recruitment and executive search. But I was like, I want to stand in front of people and teach. Anyway, life had a different plan. So got approached by these gentlemen after COVID. I don't know what's going on in my life. No cash flow, nothing. Two kids, Cape Town has dried up on me. You know, when you're trying to find and make plans, but nothing is coming to surface. And these gentlemen came with a sister into Cape Town. Ati, we're looking for somebody to come and head up our recruitment division. I was like, exciting breakthrough. And we want you to start 1st of February 2021. And this was around November. So I started packing in November already because I'm like, future is here. Let's start packing, gave my landlord a notice, I'm leaving your place, thank you so much, and whatever. And a week before that I'm supposed to come up to Joburg, Ms. Mbete, unfortunately, market's still volatile, we're not going to be able to afford you.
Wow.
Yeah. So wow. No truck to move my car to Joburg, no truck to move my furniture. I had to quickly think. And it was a question of, Ati, do you still want to stay in this Cape Town that has nothing to offer you? Because I had a choice. I could stay, maybe stay by a friend's place or something, until I get a new apartment, find my new way. And I had to have a conversation with myself and say, Cape Town has done her best. She's offered you her best. It's time to move. There'll never be a perfect moment for you to enter Joburg. This is now it. So I gave away my furniture and one of the teachers, because I'm always surrounded by teachers and coaches in my life, he said, Ati, travel lightly, which means that whenever you are in transition, let go. There's some things that you need to let go of. So physically, spiritually, physically, I released all of my furniture. And you know, with furniture, there's everything that you treasure. And I had to let go of everything I treasure because there was a new Ati now who had to emerge because she was stepping into a new space. So the old Ati can't come to Johannesburg. There's a new Ati now who has to find herself. How does Ati appear in Joburg? And what is Ati bringing into Joburg? And how will Joburg shape Ati? And I spoke into my half-brother at the time and I told him, listen, my kids and I, we're moving. We just need a place to crash for like a month until I know what's happening because I've made the decision. I'm going now. Let go of all my furniture. And the only thing that could fit into my car, my tiny SUV at the time, was just our suitcases with clothes. And that was it. I drove from Cape Town 16 hours drive early in the morning. I didn't even have money for petrol coming. I sold my TV to get money for petrol. Because I had this burning conviction that this was the time. And that's a mistake that we tend to do a lot of times, that we silence what is that inner voice.
That inner knowing.
And the nudge, that big nudge and conviction that this is it. Because we silence it out of fear and comfort. Because fear wants you to be comfortable. And you want to stay in the known, that's stepping into the unknown. And I was like, better yet, why don't I do it now? If I don't, let me go give it a shot. I was ready to risk it all. So never be afraid to risk it in life if you want to do big things. Sometimes you have to take uncalculated risks. And there's a thing, we overthink things too much. And this is what has helped me in business. Sometimes you think when you're in it. Don't think when you're not within. The thoughts will come along in the journey. And that's how I entered into Johannesburg. Drove in, my cousin, my half-brother was like, no, sir, Ati, our house is quite small. We can't help you. Had to quickly think. So one of my traits is that I thrive under pressure. Put me under pressure, you'll get the best of me. And I was like, okay, quickly think. Who else can I call from Joburg? Called a friend of mine. She's from Garankuwa. So from Milnerton, staying close to the beach, you could smell the ocean, to Garankuwa.
Beautiful.
And that was my entry into Joburg. It was a culture shock for me. The intensity of the heat, the environment, I was like, no, 2 days and that was it. I gave myself a timeline. I was like, this is not it. Was on Facebook. I saw somebody advertise an apartment going for 3.5 in Marshalltown. I didn't even know where Marshalltown is. All I saw was an apartment and a place for my kids to be able to start. And that's how I got into Marshalltown. I only got the shock when I got there. I was like, yay. So this is the small street that everybody talks about. Opposite Carltonville Center. And that's where we were for 6 months. And I told God and I told myself, Ati, you've got 6 months to come out of here. I gave myself six
Look
months.
At you.
And that's a mistake. We tend people become comfortable in things. I never become comfortable in life. Life has always made it a point that it makes me uncomfortable, that I don't remain the same. Because there's always growth and evolution that must take place, or you'll remain the same. And I refuse to remain the same coming. There's a higher version of me who's still going to come. This is still that Ati. I'm just starting.
Preach. Oh,
so Trans-Era Bethard from a coffee shop. Got boys into school in Greenside Primary, and that's where the boys started. So I was like, okay, I'm not going back to, because I'm saving petrol now. I can't go back to Marshalltown in the CBD. I'm already in Greenside side. And my brain was like, move around where the wealthy people sit. And it was because I wanted to observe, thinking, what do they do? Found Motherland in Parkhurst at the corner there. That's where I started to begin the Trans-Era journey. And I began to write the vision. What is Trans-Era all about? What am I doing? I taught myself Canva to do your poster design, social media perspective, writing the company profile and all of that. Set on cover, self-taught myself. And how did I want to position? Who am I targeting? Who do I want to work with? I was very deliberate and clear. I said, I want to work with multinational and global brands. I'm not going to start small. I may be Marshalltown, but I want the big boys and I'm ready to play with them. So I had a plan.
Love it. I can just see a lioness.
You have to. Because either you sink or these are the cards you've been dealt with. So either you lay low and you sink, fall on the other side of the line. And it's a thin line. But people get to be confused and be frustrated by the veil, that false shadow that this is your reality. And for me, I'm like, no, there's better. There's more. I've seen it. And I need to get there. So the question I always ask people, even in my coaching, what do you see for yourself? Where do you see yourself from here? And that's a mistake. When you lose sight of where you are going in life, you accept and be complacent and accept the average and the mediocrity. And you say, this is the best when there's more to life. So it was a fight to bed trans era. We fought coffee shop. You know, when you don't even have a 20 rand coming to buy coffee. But because of that Ubuntu, because I'm the person who comes into the room, hi guys, how are you doing? And whatever, greet. So the coffee guys knew me in the shop. Everybody knew me. Hey, sis Ati and whatever. And it was so refreshing to see somebody who comes in and greet, and I was not a snob. Every morning I come in, I bring electricity, the electricity that we bring into rooms and ignite, light up the whole place. And why are you loud and all?
Yes.
That's got me free coffees. When I didn't have money, and it kept me going, and until I got my big break. And our first big break was a 270,000 deal. And that what? With before 6 months from Marshalltown into the North Riding.
Incredible. And now it is a successful, booming business, expanding into all countries.
It has grown beyond me. Trans era is not, because you know, when we start as solo entrepreneurs, you make everything about you, you build the business around you. I've realized this thing is way bigger than me. I've had to bring in people to carry this baby. I'm like, whoa. People that are stronger than me. I've got a head of executive search. People who are brilliant and geniuses that hold qualifications. Mm. Remember, I only went as far as my second year in my auditing. So I've brought in young girls who are industrial psychologists, who are fierce, and I can see they're hungry for life. And you know those people with the fire, because you can see despite the background, but there's that fire that they carry. Young girls that I see myself in. One is the head of executive search, the other one is head of recruitment and D&I advisory. And I'm saying drive, trust with them, with the business. So I've stopped making Trans Era about me. It's not about me. It's about the people that I involve, not only the people that work for Trans Era and serve in Trans Era, but the people, the candidates, the organizations that we serve.
It's so incredible. I mean, I could sit here all day long listening to you. I mean, I hope you've been helped, right? This has been such an incredible conversation. And first of all, I want to thank you for being so open and vulnerable.
Yeah.
You didn't have to say the things that you said, but I know that whatever you have said here is going to have a ripple effect out there, and it's going to help, and it's going to bring healing, and it's going to bring hope.
Yeah.
I always say, like, we shouldn't be apathy stealers.
Yeah.
You know? Well, not apathy dealers. Apathy dealers. We should be hope dealers.
True.
So thank you so much. And thank you for trusting yourself and trusting your inner knowing.
Yeah.
Because look how you are taking on the world and inspiring so many people as you go by. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Carmen. Appreciate it.
From my side, until we see you again, stick around, because we have some more exciting interviews coming. Bye now.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.